Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by the Tupac is definitely dead, so stop looking for him Foundation. Instead, it's brought to you by CrimeCon 2017. We're going to be there. It's Friday, June 9th through Sunday, June 11th, 2017, obviously, at the Marriott in Indianapolis, Indiana, USA. There's going to be a lot of great guests, some really unique experiences. There's apparently going to be canine search dogs, so finally we'll get to understand what exactly they do. If you use the code SIDEWAYS20, you'll get 20% off your purchase, and there are some deals. You know, it gets more expensive the closer you get, so buy your tickets now. Nope, seriously, buy your tickets now. And then we'll be there and we'll get to meet you. So SIDEWAYS20 at CrimeCon2017.com. You can find links to that on our website as well. Just wanted to remind you, CrimeCon 2017. Woo!
Thinking Sideways.
I don't get it.
I brought the aliens.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
I don't know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I am your host for this week, Joe, joined as usual by
Devin
and
Steve.
And the team this week, we're going to tackle another really awesome mystery. First off, I'd like to thank Sean, who suggested this like 2 years ago at least. So thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Kind of an interesting little story here.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's fun. Agree.
Yeah, it began.
If murder is fun.
Oh, murder is always fun.
Our listeners definitely think murder is fun. So.
Yeah, I just picked up a book about the Victorians and murder and the evolution of the murder mystery. And the author, I think, sums it up very nicely, is that people really love murder. And this author of this book, it's called The Invention of Murder, and she describes it quite well. It's that people really love murder. It's like listening to a big rainstorm when you're inside your house and the heater's on and you're warm and snug and dry. Mm-hmm. That's what it's like. Murder's great when it's happening to somebody else. Well, and it's really kind of true.
I saw that book on your table, and that thing will hold your door open. It's a huge book.
It's a big old book. It got a lot of great blurbs.
There we go.
Yeah, so
that's a sign of success.
It must be good. I'm only about 5 pages in so far, so we'll see. Back to our thing, though. So our murder mystery began on Valentine's Day, 1945. That would be February 14th. And it happened in the village of Lower Quinton in Warwickshire, England. Lower Quinton is about 6 miles south of Stratford-upon-Avon, which we will all know is the birthplace of the Sex Pistols.
It's the only thing.
Yeah, that's all it's known for.
Yep.
Yeah, this might be the closest I've been to one of our European mysteries, actually. I was in Stratford-upon-Avon once.
I've also been there as well.
Yeah, so about 6 miles away from the murder.
I probably drove by it.
You probably did, yeah. It's kind of in the middle of everything, so it's very easy to drive through there. Nice little place. I like Stratford. I think that's where I saw my first European McDonald's. Yeah. But it was tastefully done. They did a good job.
Oh, thank God for that.
Yeah.
Now that we've got that out of the way.
Yeah, they did a good job of incorporating it into the local architecture. Back to Clinton, or Quinton. The Lower Quinton is a tiny village of 493 people at the time. Of course, it's a little bigger today. And it was the scene of a murder, and actually it was a pretty horrific murder. You guys have read about this. It was pretty nasty, pretty brutal. On February 14th, 1945. And as if the murder wasn't bad enough, soon there were allegations and rumors of supernatural activities and witchcraft that began circulating around town and coming to the attention of the police and the press. And the case became known as the witchcraft murder. So that's what we're talking about this week. Yeah, the witchcraft murder. Pretty well known in Britain, I think.
Yeah, they've been running with it for a while.
Yeah, they have been. Scotland Yard actually did a very extensive investigation of this murder, because originally the local constable called the Stratford police to come and investigate, and they felt like they were in a little bit over their heads, so they called in Scotland Yard to investigate this, and guess who shows up but Robert Fabian, famed detective. They did a TV show about him called Fabian of the Yard.
I think it was 2 years is what that ran,
something
in
like
63,
that.
64,
in
something
the 50s,
like that.
Actually.
Or 53, 54.
54, 56, or something
so
like that.
So during his tenure as a detective still.
I think that might have been after he retired, and he started writing books about his war
Not
story.
Too much longer, though, yeah.
No, not much longer. I'm sure he was still alive, and so that wasn't one of the earliest TV shows on the BBC.
Yeah, as Joe would say, he parlayed his career at Scotland Yard into a lucrative career as an author, and then turning that into this TV series.
That's my plan with this podcast, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, me too.
Probably. I'm going to give it about another year, and then I'm going to cut and run and just, like, turn it into some Nancy Grace-esque career.
Yeah, I'm going
to steal the domain from us and all the passwords.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm going to start writing novels about it. Like, you know, like, say, D.B. Cooper gets wind of the fact that I'm hot on his trail and he decides to murder us all. You know, so that would be a kind of a good Hardy Boys-esque kind of mystery.
It would.
Yeah, there we go.
So I'll probably never get around to it, actually. But it would be fun. But back to our mystery here.
So Fabian was called in.
Yeah, Robert Fabian was called in. Much investigating was done. And they came up with basically nothing. And it didn't really help that none of the people of Laura Quinton were actually willing to admit knowing anything about the murder. And I think that this episode, the whole thing about Laura Quinton and the witchcraft murders, I think it became a basis for a theme that we've seen in movies and TV shows, et cetera, which is the tiny town with the dark, dark secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know the one I'm talking about?
I do.
You know, yeah. And the protagonist, like, you know, gets some guy up in the corner who's about to tell the truth, and then somebody else shouts him down and says, shut the hell up! Shut your bloody gob! Mm-hmm. Shut your pie hole! You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've
absolutely
all seen that. And
yeah.
I think that might have originated here, the big wall of silence.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just can't imagine that this is the first time that's ever happened, but maybe, yeah.
Probably not. But yeah, it didn't start out with Ken McElroy. It actually happened earlier than Ken.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Realistically, like I said, I bet it happened before 45.
It could have been.
And I know we're going to bring it up, but the press really got a hold of this, the British press. And so there's a lot of stuff in here that is kind of fun to unpack and see where the truth really lies.
Yeah.
And part of that, the villagers wouldn't talk, I feel, is in there.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah,
we should probably start with our victim and work our way through
the story. Yeah, I guess we haven't even said who died yet.
I know. Let's talk about that. Charles Walton, a.k.a. Charlie, was born in Lower Quinton in 1870. And lived
Did he have a propensity for biting fingers?
That's a good question. I don't know. Is that a cultural reference I'm not getting?
Yeah.
I figured as much. Yeah, so I've got his biography here. I've jotted it down. I've condensed it to about 10 pages. So settle in. This is going to be about 3 hours.
Okay.
No, just kidding. There was a period in Charlie's adolescence when he went off to a boarding school called Warthogs or something like that.
Was that for witches and wizards, and they went through train station 9 3/4?
Nobody really knows.
Okay.
But yeah, and after his return to Lower Quinton, Charlie lived a fairly normal life, working as a farm laborer. He was reported to have a gift for animals. In his youth, he was a good horse trainer, and it was said that birds would flock to him and eat out of his hand.
So he was a Disney princess.
Apparently.
Okay.
He could tame wild dogs with a few words.
Disney princess, got it.
Yeah. And although he wasn't an unfriendly guy and he was generally well regarded by the villagers, he kind of kept to himself. And when he was seen at the local pub, he was usually sitting in a corner by himself, sipping on an ale and puffing on his pipe with his perfectly normal red glowing coals where his eyes should have been.
You inserted that.
Yeah. Okay,
the coal part, I mean.
I'm lying. It's hard to know with Charlie's bio exactly where the life ends and the fiction begins.
I could guess by the things that he was dealing with in life that he might have been a little standoffish, just because of the things that he went through, which I know we're going to talk about here shortly, but I don't think that he was some crazy loner.
No, I think he was sociable enough, but he just wasn't the kind of guy that actually got out and hung out in the pub a lot.
Right.
For one thing, he wasn't that wealthy. He probably didn't have a lot of money to spread around, so he probably didn't go down there and waste a lot of money on Guinness and stuff. But he was generally, like I said, pretty well regarded by the villagers. Charlie lived in a rented cottage in Lower Quinton with his wife, and then when his sister died, they adopted her daughter Edith, who was also known as Edie. She was at the age of 3 right then. And then in 1927, Charlie's wife died, and he and Edith continued to live on in the same cottage, and they lived there for years up until he died. And by the way, Edith's dad apparently was still alive. Apparently he was not interested in raising her, so that's why Charlie and his wife adopted Edith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice of them, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stepped up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and also, as I mentioned, the year was 1945. Which, as most of you probably know, that was when the war in Europe was winding down. World War II.
Okay.
That's what it said in all the newsreels.
Yeah. Yeah. The other great war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The next great war. Yeah.
It wasn't that great. It was big, but it wasn't great.
It was great for some people, but it really sucked for most people.
Most people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, big time. But VE Day, which is victory in Europe, that was just a few months away. The Allies were doing really well. They were winning all over the place, and the war was pretty much a done deal. Everybody seemed to agree. Germany had not yet surrendered, but it was just a matter of time. And at that time, there were some Italian POWs who were being held at a prison camp nearby called Long Marston. The Long Marston I was able to find, they keep talking about it when I hear about it, is Long Marston was nearby. Hmm. The only one I can find in Google is like 50 miles away, like to the southeast. But there must, there could have been another Long Marston that was closer.
Or 50 miles isn't that far away.
Well, that's true. It isn't really.
Because there's, automobiles are everywhere.
That's true. And yeah. And so, it could have been. But and the only reason I'm mentioning the Italian POWs is because they actually do play a small part in this mystery,
mm-hmm.
as you guys probably know.
Yep.
Yeah, they do. Because they're foreigners, and hey, there's murder. Obviously, you look at the foreigners first, right?
That's the way it was, yeah.
It kind of is. And so anyway, at this point, I probably really offended our Italian listener, Luigi. I'm very sorry. I'm just kidding, guys. the Italians didn't do it, actually, I'm pretty sure. They were prisoners, but they were actually being held under pretty relaxed conditions, and they could actually leave and come and go as they please. And actually, on the day of the murder, some of the POWs went into Stratford to watch a Shakespeare play, and some other ones went to see a movie. That's how relaxed it was. I mean, if you were going to be a POW in World War II, you wanted to be these guys.
Did you do any reading on the camps in Britain at that time?
Mm, not really.
So I didn't do a huge amount, but I did. I was just kind of curious about how they were run, because this whole they were free to kind of come and go thing struck me a little strange. And this isn't the first time we've talked about this, I'm pretty sure. But what I found is that the Italians were being brought into Britain from about 1940 or 41 forward, and they had pretty lax rules, and they were pretty willing to go ahead and be laborers for the community. That's kind of how they were. That was their job while they were in the area, so they were doing farm labor. Uh-huh. So most of them seem to be okay with it.
They were probably happy as hell to be out of the war.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, is that there's stuff that you find where there's some who are, they'll see on the wall still written, Viva Mussolini, but most of the guys are like, we don't know who wrote that. No, we're totally happy, it's really nice here.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's funny is that the tone from camp to camp changed, I found in the reading, from about 1943 forward, because the camps that German soldiers were sent to suddenly had a much stronger security on them. And I'm sure that that is because the Italians were just these kind of nice guys, but the Germans are demonic, and we can't let them loose. They'll kill the women and children, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that this what is this camp name again?
Long Marston.
Yeah, Long Marston. I'm sure that it was probably one of the ones that didn't have any German POWs, or many German POWs.
Probably.
And therefore, they were going out working in the area on farms, and that's how the system kind of got a little loose.
Yeah. It's crazy what happens when you start thinking about the fact that soldiers are just like human beings, by and large, like young men
who probably
are totally cool dudes who just happen to be fighting for the country they happen to be born in, and like don't really have any kind of serious thing against the people they were fighting against.
You know, that some of those POWs in the Italians, there was some rule, I want to say it's through the Geneva Convention, but it's probably not, but there was some rule where it became a thing that Italian men, their wives, could emigrate over and live with them in the POW camp so that the family wasn't separated.
Wow.
That was an okay thing. It was common enough that you find it in the writings. It's not as if it was a weirdo one or two off thing.
Yeah.
Again, according to, compared to the experiences of most other POWs,
this
was
is pretty,
pretty
good.
Sweet deal.
That were on being held by the Axis. Yeah.
It should probably be noted too that at that time, 1945, I mean, I think Mussolini was deposed in 1943. He eventually was rescued by the Germans, and they reconstituted a sort of mini fascist republic in northern Italy when the Germans invaded and took over that part of it. And there was an anti-fascist, anti Mussolini faction in the southern part. So Italy was in the middle of the Civil War at this time.
Yeah.
It might have been that all of these guys, if not most of them, actually felt no loyalty at all to Mussolini at this point in time.
Well, and I'll just point out that as far as I know, as far as you know, there was no huge like crime wave that came of these POWs being in that area. So we can pretty much discount, though we're not in theories, the Italian.
I think so. Although you never know. I mean, there could be outliers in there, but yeah.
True.
Well, in any population,
yeah.
Do we want to keep talking about Charlie?
No. Let's talk more about Charlie and off the Italians for a while. Let's talk about Charlie. He, at this time, was working. He didn't have a farm of his own. He was a laborer, but he worked at various farms in the area. And at this time, he had been working at a local farm called the Furs, and he'd been there about 9 months. And his job that day was to clear hedges. So, as you know, in Britain, they've got those hedgerows that sort of separate fields and separate roads from fields and stuff like that. And, of course, with hedges, you know, you want them to grow up, not out. But they, being hedges, they want to grow out. So you got to...
Hedges just don't cooperate.
No, you got to whack them back. And so that's what he was doing. He left his house around 9 a.m., and by the way, his house is still there. You can see pictures of it on the World Wide Web.
Who is it?
It is still there, yeah.
I must not have even just made the connection when I saw the picture. Okay.
Yeah, I know. It's still there. It was like three interconnected cottages that eventually somebody bought and combined them into one nice big house.
Got it.
But apparently it's still
there. So the structure is still intact. Got it.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, nobody got murdered there. They got murdered somewhere else, thank God. So he headed up in the Furs. There's this thing called Meon Hill. Although I might be mispronouncing that, it might be Meon, but I think it's Meon. And so he started clearing hedge.
And this is at 9 o'clock in the morning on Valentine's Day.
Apparently he was seen walking that direction about now between 9 and 9:30. He was carrying his walking stick because he had arthritis.
He was like 75, 76?
He was 74. He was born in 1870, so he was 74 and still working in the fields.
This is 1945.
So his birthday was in May of 1870, so this was February, so yeah, he hadn't quite turned 75 yet.
Okay, there you go, yeah.
But, yeah.
So he had his walking stick.
Yeah, got his walking stick because he had Artie, and he also had him with him at...
Had what?
Artie.
He just abbreviated arthritis.
You don't be abbreviating arthritis like that.
Yeah. Let's see what else he had. He had a pitchfork and he had a slash hook, which were his tools of the trade. And I know you all know what a pitchfork is. If you don't, hold your hand up in front of you with your fingers extended. Now rotate your hand 90 degrees towards your face.
Is it a 2 or 3-prong pitchfork? I never
saw
the description.
That is the question. I mean, most of the ones you see are like 4-prong ones. I saw one on the BBC that was actually a 2-prong pitchfork.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah,
I believe the older ones were 2-prong.
I believe it was a 2-prong.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, hard to say, but I think it was. As far as a slash hook goes, I've seen pictures of slash hooks, and they come in all different styles. A lot of them are sort of shaped like a sickle, like a curved sickle with a long handle
on them.
Kind
of a curved knife on one edge and a straight edge on the other.
Yeah, kind of like that. So
they're kind of shaped almost like a cowboy boot.
Yeah, and kind of a nice little thing for clearing brush.
No, I know.
Okay, you looked at me funny.
It was just not a way I would have thought to describe it, but it's pretty good.
Okay.
Cowboy boot. Or it looks like Italy.
Italy.
If you grabbed Europe and turned
That's
it upside
why everybody
down.
Viva Italia!
Yeah. All right, so yeah, they say that that Italy totally looks like a slash hook. Yeah, and they're totally right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, the slash hook, besides being a great brush-clearing tool, would be a great murder weapon.
Apparently.
Yeah, it really would be. And actually, when you think about it, the walking stick that he was carrying and also the pitchfork wouldn't be such bad murder weapons either.
Yeah.
True.
And as it happens, Charlie carried all the murder weapons to the place where he was killed. Because it appears that all of them were used on him. And that's what did I say? It was a brutal, murder? Yeah. The last reports of him alive were between about 12 noon and 12:30. And those were by Alfred J. Potter, who managed the Furs. Again, that was the farm that Charlie was working on.
Mm-hmm.
And that window isn't firm.
Yeah, no, he changed his time quite a few times.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw it, and it felt like it could have gone all the way out to 1 o'clock, possibly, depending on his version. So
yeah, and so it's a little... And so,
iffy.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, I think one of the ways they sort of fixed it at 1 p.m., because it was believed, it was concluded later on, that the murder probably happened between 1 and 2 p.m. on that day. And he said that he saw him at about 12:30, and it appeared that he had X number of yards of hedge left to clear at that time. But of course, he saw him from like 500 yards away. That's a long ways. But when they actually found his body, about 4 more yards of hedge had been cleared, and it was at Potter's estimate that it would take about half an hour to do that work. So, 1 o'clock. Kind of works.
And you said he had been working for Potter for how long?
About 9 months, although that's kind of actually that at this time, but he actually had been working for him on and off for about 5 years.
Okay.
Because, yeah, Potter had been managing this farm for about 5 years, and so he had, you know, lots of experience with Charlie and some of the other local laborers. Apparently he managed it for a company that was owned by his dad.
So it's a family business.
It's a family business, yeah. So, okay, so sometime around 1 to 2, the population of Lower Quinton dropped from 493 to 492. So that's not a surprise, I guess.
And we knew it was coming.
Oh, yeah, we kind of did. Yeah, it's kind of to be expected when you hear the words, you know, witchcraft murder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so Edith, you remember Edie, his niece, she was working at a factory, and she got home about 6. And guess what? Charlie wasn't there. And because Charlie was pretty regular in his habits, she became a little bit worried about him. So she went and found her neighbor, a guy named Harry Beasley. And they went looking for Alfred Potter and started looking on the farm for the body. And since Potter was the last guy to see him, and since Potter had a pretty good idea of where he was supposed to be working, they headed out there that direction, and guess what? They found him.
I'm sorry. I'm giggling to myself over here because you primed me to be thinking about Harry Potter.
Uh-huh.
And now you've got Potter and you've got Harry Beasley, which is just kind of like...
That's a good point. I
know. Ron Weasley and Harry Potter. And
Beasley, yeah. Harry and Potter. I know. That's a good point.
Okay.
Yeah,
this is where J.K. Rowling got the idea.
Pretty sure.
She just changed the name.
Yeah.
Totally. Oh, and my previous reference when he went off to Warthog School at his adolescence, okay, I totally
made that
up.
Oh, wait. It was Harry... J. Potter. So this is even closer.
Mm.
Oh, is it? Okay. So, yeah, maybe this is where she got all the names for her little, for her books.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Side quest over.
Sorry.
Back to story.
Sorry,
oh, yeah,
sorry.
Back to our story. So they, it was, of course, it was 6 p.m., after 6 p.m., so it was dark. They took some torches. Presumably by torches, they're talking flashlights and not the kind like you see in Frankenstein movies with the angry villagers and the pitchforks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they found his body, and he was all beaten, and he had been pinned to the ground with his pitchfork. The pitchfork was driven either around his neck or through his neck, depending on the version of this that you hear. And so his body, and then the pitchfork itself had been sort of twisted forward and wedged into the hedge that he was working on.
Which is weird.
Yeah, and then, well, they might have, whoever did it, might have wanted to expose his throat, because his throat had been you remember I talked about the slash hook?
That's true. It's a good point.
Yeah, they found the slash hook buried in his throat. And they also found his walking stick nearby with, blood and hair on it, because he'd been beaten with the walking stick also. So, yeah, whoever did this really, well, I don't know what to say about it. They had a good time, or else they were really angry about something.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, they really worked something out on him.
Yeah.
It was the conclusion, actually, the Scotland Yard chaps, that there was a maniac on the loose.
Of course.
Which is reasonable enough, I guess. It is kind of a maniac kind of murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, most creepy and ominous of all, is a cross had been carved into Charlie's chest.
Dun, dun, dun.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And he lost a lot of blood, most of his blood, which had drained into the soil. Yeah, there was a lot of blood there. So there was an investigation by Stratford police. Of course, they set the time of death, the forensic examiner did, between 1 and 2 p.m. And they noted that he was missing his pocket watch. He had a fairly cheap tin pocket watch that he carried with him all the time. It was gone, which maybe robbery is a murder. Both of them, I don't know. And Stratford, of course, as I mentioned earlier, they decided to call in Scotland Yard. And, of course, Chief Inspector Fabian arrives.
That was 2 days after the murder.
He arrived on the 16th, yeah. Of course, he was all after it. They, besides interviewing everybody in town, and they did interview the entire village, they also called in an RAF plane that had an aerial camera on it, and they photographed the entire village, including the murder scene, just looking for any possible clues.
So what I love about the whole RAF angle is there's some things that you see that say, and the pool of blood around him was so big it could be seen from several hundred feet above in the air.
That's a little hard to believe. I've heard that one too.
I
don't think that, I think the blood would soak into the ground before it would spread big enough to be seen from hundreds of feet in the air.
I would agree with this.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, extreme drought.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But, yeah, it was mid-February,
white
so
ground.
I'm kind of doubting that.
And it's, you know, England, so.
No. Yeah.
Really doubting that.
Kind of. What else? They had a call. They had a ground search. Local police, and I think they were assisted by military in this. And the military came in with metal detectors and everything because they were looking for the watch. Yeah.
Because that was their only lead.
They didn't have much to go on here. And, yeah, the watch, maybe they were hoping possibly they could get a fingerprint or two off of it, but they never found it. There are reports that the watch was found like 15 years later.
Mm-hmm.
When they were tearing down the outhouses at the cottage where Edie and Charlie were living. Supposedly, they found the watch in the outhouse. Although I've heard that that's also not entirely confirmed. But...
Also, it feels like it'd be hard to confirm it was his.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a fairly generic, just tin...
run-of-the-mill
watch.
Yeah.
He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would have it monogrammed or anything like that. So.
No, it actually had been monogrammed, but he had bought it used, so it had somebody else's name in it.
Hmm.
And so it could have been positively identified as
fair.
His
because
it did have another guy's name in it. But again, Charlie was not a rich guy, not at all. The closest he came to wealth, which was not much, is when his wife died in 1927, she left him about 300 pounds.
Yeah, just under.
Yeah, about 297, and which he put in a bank. And by the time of his death, I think it was down to about 11 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't as if he was living lavish.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not at all.
No, because it was 1927. He'd lived on that almost 300 pounds for nearly 20 years.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he just pulled it out for, you know, extra expenses, emergencies,
or if Edie needed something.
Or work is slow,
Yeah, something like
that. Oh, that's what a savings account is for.
Totally, but for the most part, I don't think he needed it. He worked all the time, and so he usually could support himself okay. Now, quickly, let's a quick look at the autopsy. When they examined him, they found that his trachea had been cut. That's, you know,
shocking.
Your windpipe. Yeah, not surprising. He also had broken ribs and bruises on his chest, presumably from the walking stick, because he had sustained blows to the head, which were matched to the walking stick. So the broken ribs and stuff could have also come from the walking stick or one of the other weapons.
Or somebody just punching him. He's a 75-year-old man. He's not as if he's got super
strong
bones.
Who's worked his whole life. I mean, you know, not lived an easy life.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was probably tougher than he looked.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. He also had some defensive wounds. He had a cut in his left hand. He had extensive bruising on his right arm and hand. And so he was obviously trying to fend off whoever was attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't quite succeed. And also his shirt had been opened and his fly had been unbuttoned.
Yeah. Makes no sense. Okay.
No, not really.
Oh, no. He was wearing pants that had a button fly.
Yeah.
I've had pants that have come undone when I'm working. You know, if you're twisting and turning, I could maybe see that.
Mm-hmm.
Shirt, I can maybe see if he was hot. He's sweaty from working.
He's working. Yeah, I mean, he could have unbuttoned his shirt. It might be he didn't even button it to begin with when he left that day.
Well, I thought it was a cool day. It wasn't
probably
as if,
was.
I mean, it was January or February.
But he was also wearing a jacket when he was found. And so,
was he?
Yeah.
It's hard to cut across in someone's chest when their shirt is buttoned. I'll just say.
True.
It's a good point. Yeah,
button the
I
button.
Thought about that.
And to the unbuttoned pants, I guess, is it not possible that his attacker came upon him when he was...
urinating?
Yeah.
Well, I was about to suggest that. I know that when I choose to jump somebody and murder them, I usually wait till they're at their most vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that is one of the most vulnerable states in life.
That's a great time to do it, yeah. And so, yeah, I know. I'm not exactly, you know, your great, courageous warrior here. I admit it. I'll go for every advantage I can. The local police also clued Fabian of the Yard in on some other interesting local lore that they seem to feel might have some bearing on this case. And certainly if it had no bearing on the case, it certainly influenced the public perception of it.
Oh, I would say that's the only thing that it really... did.
Yeah, as far as whether this provided him with any sort of a roadmap to solve the killing, well, not really. But the first thing is he clued him in on That's Fabian. A little bit on murder that had happened in 1875, which is like, what, 80 years before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a ways before. 70 years, 80 years, I don't know. Of a woman named Ann Tennant. Although I've seen, in one account I saw her name as Ann Turner, but everywhere else it's Ann Tennant. So I think Tennant is the correct name.
We'll go with it.
Yeah, she had been murdered under identical circumstances.
Same space?
Nearby, but not in the same field or anything like that. Mm. But she'd been
area.
Yeah, mm-hmm. pinned to the ground with a pitchfork, and then her throat was slashed with the sign of the cross. With a billhook. She was killed by a guy named James Haywood, and he said that he did it because she was a witch, and she was trying to save the village from this witch.
He was trying to save the village
he
from
was.
Her.
Okay. Yeah. Did I say she?
Yeah, yeah. But that's okay.
Oh, that's okay.
Sorry. He was found guilty. That's James Haywood, and he was hanged.
That's because there were people around.
Well, there were neighbors there, yeah.
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 And he was intoxicated, if I remember correctly.
He had some alcoholic cider, apparently.
He had been drinking. And
he apparently was also considered slow-witted.
That was what the locals called.
Considered mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, not...
not all there.
Not really, yeah. So that's the one story. And then there was another story. And this is taken out of a book by a guy named the Reverend James Harvey Bloom. In this book, he gave an account of a young Charles Walton in 1885. And he tells in the tale of this, he was a young farm laborer, and he was heading home one night, and he met a large sort of spectral black dog on the road heading home. And then the next night he met the dog again. And then on the third night, he saw the dog yet again, but this time there was a headless woman walking with the dog.
Ooh.
And I know. So, yeah, I know. So Charles didn't think anything of it at the time. Well, just kidding. I'm sure he did. But then later that night when he got home, he found out that his sister had died. And also, by the way, in another version of this that I've seen out there, he actually saw the dog 9 nights in a row.
Okay, I was just saying, I thought it was 7, but yeah, there's varying lengths.
There are, yeah. Apparently, it turns out the black dog in local lore is a harbinger of death.
Yeah.
You see one of these scary, creepy black dogs, and that's not good news.
In the UK, the black dog has been around for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
Although what's funny is that most of the time, it's an evil spirit. There are a few that are benevolent, if not helpful, which those are the ones that I want to see.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it's always a black dog.
Yeah, kind of tough on it. Say if you're a black lab, you know, you're just this friendly, happy black lab, and everybody thinks you're evil.
You go to run up to somebody and say, "Hi, how you doing?
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy."
Yeah, bang, bang, bang.
Oh, are we playing chase? Okay, I'll catch you.
Yeah.
Black labs are the best dogs.
They are cool dogs. Yeah. There is, even here in America, there's a little bit of a prejudice against black dogs.
Yeah, unfortunately,
there really is.
Not as much as black cats, but
no, that's true. Yeah. But yeah, there definitely is one. All right, well, we're going to talk about a few theories here. But first, I hear a black dog scratching on my door. So let me take a quick break here and go answer that.
It's pitch black. Open your eyes. This is a good start to your day. You're in bed, in your bedroom. It's a mess. It's a small bedroom with a faded rug and dirty walls. There's your robe, a screwdriver, and a toothbrush outside of your bed. You have to decide. Get out of bed. If you do, your friend Ford might take you on an unbelievable adventure. If you don't, well, you'll spend the whole day in bed. If the thought of getting out of bed to travel the universe seems unbearable, you might want to talk to somebody about that. Lucky for you, you don't even have to get out of bed with Talkspace. Talkspace is the online therapy company, and they make it easy to connect with a licensed therapist handpicked just for you for as little as $32 a week. Using Talkspace, you can text, audio, and video message with your therapist as much as you want. To sign up or learn more, go to Talkspace.com/sideways. And as a special offer for our listeners, you can use coupon code SIDEWAYS to get $30 off your first month and show your support of the show. That's SIDEWAYS and Talkspace.com/sideways. And don't forget your towel.
And we're back. It was okay, not a black dog. It was just my cat. All right, let's talk about some theories. All right, our first theory, suicide. And we're talking about who and why he was killed, etc., in case you've forgotten our story, the murder of Charlie Walton, the witchcraft murder. So suicide. Either one of you guys want to go to bat for the suicide theory?
No.
So is this your new MO?
Yeah,
put a funny, kid, absolutely not be theory
yeah,
in the
suicide.
Very beginning of it.
Suicide seems a little unlikely. He would have had to have been a very, very determined suicidal guy, I think.
We've talked about the silliness of this kind of stuff before kind of story.
No, we'll just rule that one right out, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't suicide. Obviously, probably not natural causes. Probably not accidental.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves kind of murder.
Yeah.
It kind of does. Let's start with some of the more sensational and interesting ones first. There's one theory that was out there floating around quite a bit, which is that Charlie was killed by a coven of witches as a sacrifice. To replenish the soil. And so the apparently the date actually has some significance. Apparently that date under the old calendar, and I don't know which calendar that is, but that's what they say, the old calendar, that was considered Candlemas Day, and that was the day when you had a chance to influence the next growing season, and the best way to do that was to kill somebody.
Blood sacrifice.
And yeah, let their blood drain into the soil.
I'll just say, I know you have some other stuff here.
Yeah.
But in my understanding of witches, they are not typically super akin to like Christian symbolism.
Which Ash Wednesday would be something of.
Yeah, or like, you know, the cross carved in the chest. Like, usually it'd be like a pentagram or something more wicked.
According to the papers, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you would think more than just a cross, which typically I think is a hindrance to witches, isn't it? Or are there Christian witches? Is that, am I missing something?
No, you know, I mean, well, you know, it might not have been a symbol of their own faith. It might have been mocking his faith. I mean, when you think about it, imagine this in this sense, you know, it's like, well, you know, hey, we just did whatever with the hell we pleased with you. Your God didn't do anything for you, did he? Ha ha.
Yeah.
And so that's one way of looking at the cross.
That's true. Though I guess for me, I think they're trying to make a sacrifice to their gods or their beliefs. So you would want to do as much to honor your beliefs as possible, not degrade
the guy that you're that's
good with words.
I'm right behind her on that,
that
one.
Is,
that
is a good point.
Sense.
Yeah, you would say, oh, almighty
sense.
God of the soil, here is this sacrifice to you in which we carved your symbol. And for all I know, the symbol is a cross. I don't know. I'm not a witch.
The symbol of Dobby is right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I am assuming that the cross is not the witch symbol.
But I could be wrong.
You know, I've never heard you be wrong before.
That's true.
Yeah,
Before in my entire life ever been wrong.
No,
so.
I mean, I was once.
Yeah.
I thought I'd made a mistake. Turned out I hadn't.
Mm-hmm. This would be a first.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Where were we? What are some of the
other... So this is a druid
ceremony.
I was going to say, because I see we're talking about witches, and yet I see druids, and I didn't know that those were so much interchangeable.
Yeah, I don't know either. I actually am not an expert on the Druids, and
nobody really is.
Not really.
Little remains of the Druids' practices. So
yeah, not much is known. Apparently, there was a what was thought by many to be a Druid ruin, which is a stone circle, which was at least in 1945 called the Whispering Knights.
And that was supposed to be close to the murder scene? Is that what
it was? Exactly, yeah. So that has some significance in people's minds that it was so close. And also, apparently Warwickshire itself was, and perhaps still even is, a hotbed of witchery. And then, of course, the Druids apparently considered Ash Wednesday to be a significant day, the day to make the sacrifice to the earth. Although they didn't, it wasn't Ash Wednesday, obviously, because they predated all the Ash Wednesday stuff, right?
The problem, of course, is that the Whispering Nights.
Yeah.
Isn't actually close.
No, it's like
to the
12,
murder scene.
It's like 12 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. So I mean, that's close, I guess, when you think about it in the overall scheme of things. I mean, look how far the Earth is from the Sun. Yeah. I mean,
true.
But yeah, no, 12 miles is kind of a long ways.
So are we going to talk about the bunkiness of the cross?
Yeah, the cross actually is not mentioned in the autopsy at all. Apparently, the cross carved in the chest was sort of made up by somebody.
Oh, boo.
Yeah, I mean, big surprise. I mean, how often does that happen? This just goes to show you that, You know, everybody thinks that all this crap about fake news all began with the internet. I'm sorry to tell you this, guys.
it happened ages ago.
Oh, it's been happening forever, I think.
Okay, is that all we've got on the whole Common thing?
Yeah, and so the Common thing is like, well, okay, he was anywhere near some sort of Jewish circle. There was no cross, and according to the experts, Wiccan experts that I've heard quoted about this particular thing, is he was actually too old for the sacrifice. Apparently you want young blood.
Yeah, I mean, you would, right?
Yeah, you want young blood.
Yeah, isn't it always, it's the young virgin
that
is the perfect vessel for sacrifice?
Well, they have the young energy that can replenish the energy of the soil, right? Uh-huh. You don't want old, used up energy, because then it's like, psh, whatever.
You know, it's what's really interesting about that is that just very, very recently, medical researchers has found out that there really is such a thing as young and old blood.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They have.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
They found that if you take a transfusion from a 20-year-old guy and give it to an 80-year-old guy, the 80-year-old will have a significant health increase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which also that sort of argues against like old people donating blood, mm-hmm. because if you got a guy who's like really having a hard time trying to recover from something and you put an 80-year-old's blood into him, it's like that's maybe not such a great idea.
I don't know if it's so much the I'm not going down that.
Better
that
than
path.
Nothing, but it's not ideal. But anyway, so young blood. So Charlie was not exactly possessing any young blood. So that's why, besides the fact that there's really nothing to support this anyway. It just didn't make sense from a whole Wiccan point of view.
I agree.
To make him a sacrifice. But there was another possibility, which is that he was murdered actually by the people of Lower Quinton, because Charlie himself was a witch or a warlock.
As the case may be.
And there was some stuff. You know, remember I said he had this strange ability to communicate with animals, it seemed like. He was a great horse trainer, apparently. He also had the birds flocking around him and could subdue wild dogs. And he also apparently had some natterjack toads that he kept. And apparently these are strange little toads that don't really hip-hop like other toads do. They kind of run instead.
Have you looked at these toads?
Yeah.
They're wide. They're wide body. So uh-huh. It's very hard for him to get a good jump going.
Uh-huh. What are they called?
Natterjack toads, N-A-T-T-E-R.
So you know how a toad, usually their body is... the shape of it from their chest is kind of conical. These things are more like a frisbee with eyes and legs.
Oh, yeah, they're so cute. Just little derpy things.
Aww.
So that's why they don't jump very much, because they can't.
Uh-huh. Oh, they're so round and weird.
Cute little thing.
So he kept some of those. He had some of those.
So those were repeated. Pets or lived near his house, one of the two?
Repeatedly, he actually kept them. And apparently, you could use a natterjack to put a hex on your neighbor's crops. And what he did was he tied a small toy plow to one of the frogs, or one of the toads, I guess, and sent it scurrying off across people's fields, which caused their crops to fail. And as a matter of fact, there was a big failure in 1944 of the crop. And it's rumored that the local townsfolk blame Charlie for this.
So you know what I would do if I was a guy who was slowly working through my savings account and having a hard time continuing to do my farm work,
uh-huh.
but needed to still eat, and there happened to be an abundance of toads around,
mm-hmm.
I would gather them up and keep them to eat them.
I would. That's the thing, is Charlie kind of had an interest in not seeing people's crops fail.
I was going to say, he was a farmhand. His job depended on the crops being successful.
Yeah. Well, and if he in some way encouraged these little toads to be around, I'm like, that's a food source, man.
Probably. And let's not forget, this was still the tag end of World War II, so food was probably a little scarce.
Rationing.
There was some rationing.
Lots of rationing.
And those things probably made good food sources,
mm-hmm.
along with local rabbits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stories, too, about Charlie, like he could have birds eating out of his hand and stuff like that, they seem to be a bit apocryphal.
Yeah.
And the whole subduing wild dogs and stuff. Yeah.
You know, there's people who are the dog whisperer. People who mm-hmm. can talk in a soothing tone, and they're able to calm animals down, and there are people who can do that.
Yeah.
The whole bird eating out of the hand thing, if he is going to the same place feeding the birds every day,
yeah.
it's like the old lady at the park with the pigeons.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So it's entirely possible that that's what he was doing.
And it's these, I used to see him. He always would feed the birds. They would eat out of his hand. And then, of course, our lovely newsie grabs that and throws it in the weekly rag. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, a little indication there of witchcraft. Yeah. And Inspector Fabian actually didn't talk about any of this witchcraft stuff in his police reports, but later on when he started writing books he started mentioning this stuff a little bit more, but obviously he had sort of an interest in selling books.
Oh yeah.
So he sexing it up with a little talk of witchcraft probably was in his own interests.
It just seems so late to be doing the witchcraft, like 1945. Seriously, you're gonna be like, she's a witch.
He added that like 5 years later or something.
I know, but that just seems so late. Like the 1950s, seriously, this is the thing you're still going to bring out and say, well, he was a witch, so, we had to kill him. That's insane to me.
There's still...
I was going to say, I still know people who burn, sage when you put it in the bundle and it's this...
Okay, let's be fair. That's very different from killing someone because you think they're a witch.
But there are people who still believe in... And I apologize if anybody doesn't like me saying this, but there are still people who believe in ghoulies and ghosties and all these other things that we can't see being real and trying to defend themselves. And weird stuff like that happens. The 1940s is not as cosmopolitan as
I'm not saying it's cosmopolitan. I'm just saying there's a huge difference between believing there's a ghost in your house and literally bludgeoning an old man to death and cutting a cross in his chest because you think he might be a witch.
Britain has had 500 years of hunting witches.
I don't think it's just
a cultural norm.
I still think it's crazy, and I still think it's crazy that that somebody would be like, oh, this is a good theory for why.
Well, that's the thing about it. There might have been a few Looney Tuners in Lower Quinton who actually believed that sort of stuff, but the entire village,
probably not.
A bit of a stretch.
The other thing that this particular theory makes me think of is you had mentioned at one time the whole nobody in the village would talk and say what they knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the wall of silence.
Yeah, and it was because of this they killed the warlock thing is what you see in a lot of places. But I found the best description somewhere, which was they would share nothing with him. Because they knew nothing and had nothing to share. None of them were there.
That was it. That was the whole thing.
Hundreds of people who weren't there.
Probably from the Scotland Yard's point of view, is like saying that nobody would talk to us. And well, they interviewed everybody, and everybody said, "I don't have a clue." And so it probably
or they told them the little bit they knew, which was unhelpful.
For me, it's similar to if somebody came to one of us and said, "Hey, I want to talk to you about the Kyron Horman disappearance," and we'd be like, "I don't know," and they'd be like, "The Thinking Sideways crew is stonewalling us."
Totally. Yeah,
it's the same thing to me. Where it's like we live in the same city, but like what? No, you don't know anything. So what do you have to say?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm ashamed to admit this, but I don't really know anything about Kyron. I mean, other than a few basic facts, I haven't really followed it that much.
Which is okay, because you're not involved in the case.
Yep.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. If we ever choose to cover that, I might have a good source or two, but yeah, we'll put that. But anyway, Charlie's niece, Edie, back to our story. I saw a BBC interview with her. It was a brief little interview, and I know, Steve, you've seen it.
This is the best.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's this guy, this BBC journalist, is being very melodramatic about the whole thing. And he's actually out at the base of Meon Hill in his trench coat and everything with his long hair flowing in the breeze and stuff. And he's going like...
It's more like puffing around in the breeze. Yeah. It's not flowing at all.
Yeah, and then he talks to Edie and says, what about all this? What about all this witchcraft? And she's like, I don't know what is it.
Just stop.
Don't do the accent.
No, it's like I never heard of it actually. The Piper's just made it all up.
I like that every time he does an accent, it sounds slightly German.
He watched a lot of Monty Python.
Yeah.
Then the interview goes. I mean, Warwickshire is reputed to be a great center of witchcraft and sorcery. Have you ever met a witch? And she says, no, never heard of it, actually. she's like, this is all rubbish.
Joe and I had the best conversation on the phone the other day about the fact that this is obviously one of those things that the guys from Monty Python learned to parody.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is so absurdly funny when you watch it.
It's unintentionally kind of funny. And, obviously these guys were kind of an inspiration for the Python guys, I think.
I'm sure.
I really do. But Edie was great. She's just like, oh, don't know anything about that, actually. All right, some more theories. There was, of course, the Italians.
I know.
They did catch one Italian with some blood in his hands, but it turned out that he had just gotten out so he could go hunt rabbits to supplement his diet. Which, again, kind of makes sense.
Makes sense because
wartime rationing, you can't really blame him for that.
As the token Italian on this podcast, I think Italians didn't do it.
You think so? Okay,
yep.
I'll buy that. No, there was no reason for him. Again, these guys had a sweet deal going on.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there was no reason to go out and murder
this guy. The weather in England is not nearly as nice as it is in Italy, but
you're not fighting.
Some parts of Italy are kind of gross.
I got to say, one nice thing I like about Britain over Italy is they have, number one, no volcanoes. Number two, no massive earthquakes. Okay. But other than that, Italy's got a lot going for it. Back to our theories. This is another theory that was considered but kind of dismissed by the police. But apparently Charlie had a friend named George Higgins. They'd known each other for many years. They hadn't talked for a few months, but, you know, they were well acquainted. And Higgins was actually working quite close by, like in a barn, like maybe 300 yards from the murder scene. And obviously, in a murder, you really want to look at family and acquaintances first, right?
Right.
So Higgins was, you know, given a little bit of scrutiny. And maybe he did it, I don't know, but the police really couldn't find any motive. I mean, they seemed to be friends.
How far away was he supposedly working?
Supposedly like 300 yards away or right around.
Oh, yeah, like right there.
He was close by.
He would have maybe heard something.
300 yards is still a ways. I mean, it's just...
Three football fields.
Yeah.
That's
so
not helpful to me. You should know that by now.
Yeah.
No, I know. It's not close.
Three city blocks.
Yeah, but that's not... If somebody's getting murdered three city blocks away in the outdoors, you think you might hear something.
Well, you know, but think about it.
They're both old men.
But there's a fight, right? I mean,
there was a fight.
There must have been some noise.
I'm just trying to play devil's advocate right now.
I appreciate that. But, you know, you don't know. I mean, besides the distance, you don't know what the terrain was like. They might have been over a hill. There might have been all kinds of hedges in between.
He could have been listening to our podcast.
He could have been listening to a podcast.
Because he was a time traveler.
Yep.
Exactly. And, of course, you're on a farm, so if you hear a scream, you might just think it's an animal.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, slaughtering a pig.
Yeah, so he probably thought nothing of it. Or, you know, he heard a few screams and just thought, well, I don't want to get involved. Mm-hmm. So, knowing it was his buddy.
Well, you make a great point. Farm animals are amazingly noisy.
Yeah.
They make a lot of noise.
Oh, yeah. And so somebody getting murdered, I don't know, not necessarily going to stand out. So much for George Higgins. The police dismissed him pretty quickly, just like the Italians. And, of course, there was his niece, Edie. I mean, she would have stood to inherit maybe 11 pounds, so she had a big motive.
Huge motive.
Apparently, I know. Charlie apparently did have the habit of leaving the toilet seat up.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, I know.
Well, to be fair, I mean, 11 pounds in 1945 was 440 pounds like today, which is like, you know, $450, which...
People have been killed for less, sadly.
I think
they have.
I think the exchange rate actually was more favorable back in the day. So dollar-wise, it might have been worth more.
Oh, to the U.S. dollar?
Yeah.
If she had then left the country, which she did not do.
Yeah. Well, the other reason is not to think Edie did it. Again, you know, you want to look at the family and acquaintances and friends. So she merits a look. But I think the murderer was probably a man, especially... The pitchfork. I mean, the pitchfork was driven into the ground so hard, apparently it took two policemen to pull it out of the ground.
So I was going to ask you about that, because when I was doing the reading and I saw this stuff about the pitchfork, what I couldn't understand was it that the sheer act of pulling the pitchfork out of the ground, you know, the tines out of the ground took two men, Or had it been jammed so far into the ground and then at such a strange, funky angle to wedge it under the hedge that it took two people. Do you see where I'm getting here?
It might have taken two guys to get it untangled from the hedge or something.
Yeah,
it's hard to see, especially if the ground was soft and wet, which I assume it was. It's hard to imagine it being that
I was going to say, if the ground was wet and soft when it happened, I mean, there's a couple hours elapsed. And it's February. So like in Portland, for instance, right? If something happens midday, heat of the day in February, and then temperatures drop down to freezing, it's possible it could have been shoved in the ground when it was kind of wet and soggy and then subsequently froze and the ground hardened around it.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of questions about this. I mean, I don't disagree that it was done with some extreme force.
Yeah, so probably a guy.
It also, I think he was probably strong enough that he could have defended himself against his niece.
Probably. Well, and also...
I also don't see that she had any motive because literally he had raised her. Now, not that patricide doesn't happen.
But also there's the whole question of, well, I think she was at her job at that time.
Yeah, she was working.
She was at her job. And then also, you know, having dual income in that time is better than having single income.
A lot better.
You know, and killing off somebody who's bringing income into the house, maybe not...
Not a smart move. You know, and also... There were better ways for her to do it that were less suspicious. I mean, she could have like spiked his tea and sedated him and then smothered him with a pillow.
Yeah.
He was 74 freaking years old.
Yeah.
If he'd just woken up dead in his bed,
nobody would have
said
anything. If he had just woken up dead in his bed.
Exactly.
She had woken up to find him dead in his bed, is what Joe meant to say.
Oh, top of the morning to him, feeling kind of dead. But anyway, she had better ways, so I'm going to rule Edie out if that's okay with you.
I would, too.
Next local person was the favorite suspect, Alfred J. Potter, the guy who owned the farm, was actually scrutinized quite extensively by Scotland Yard. It happened on his land, and there were some things about him, like the local constable that came to the crime scene initially before the Stratford police arrived, said that Potter seemed nervous and kind of upset and complained about being cold. And he also wanted to get out of there. As soon as the Stratford police showed up, he left. And the constable thought that was kind of odd.
So the constable thought that was odd because he shouldn't have been squeamish around death because he worked on a farm.
Exactly.
So he sees animals getting killed all the time.
But that doesn't mean...
That's a little different from a human being getting murdered,
it
right?
It is, but it also, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but was the Furs an animal farm?
That's a good question. I just, you know, I think they were... I heard talk about him having to deal with heifers and stuff like that, so I know they had at least some cattle.
Mm-hmm. But were they slaughtered regularly for food? And and what's to say he didn't contract that work out?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff that you do on farms, like castrating animals and all kinds of good, fun stuff. That's
veterinary duties happen.
But that's different than doing it to a human.
Oh, yeah, very much so. You can be kind of inured to the whole thing. But not only was it Charlie a human being, but he was somebody that Potter had known for like 5 years.
Yeah.
So obviously finding him brutally murdered.
Yeah, that wouldn't
might
be
have been a big shock. Or
maybe he might have a really good reason for being uncomfortable at the scene.
Yeah.
That was totally normal.
Pretty much. So I'm going to say that doesn't really mean much. And of course there was a whole time that he saw Charlie in the fields, which changed like several times. At first he came out of the local pub about around noontime. And was walking through the village, and he said he looked up on Mayon Hill and saw Charlie about 500 yards or so away working on the hedge. He said the time was 12:10. Later, he changed that time to 12:15. Later on, changed it to 12:20. And then when they had the inquest hearing, he said at that time that he saw Charlie up on Mayon Hill at about 12:30, and that he was standing there in shirt sleeves and not actually doing anything at the moment, just standing there. So maybe he saw Charlie, maybe he saw the murderer.
I guess we've talked about this before, though. I mean, people's sense of time is so fickle.
Oh, yeah.
And changes, especially as you're trying to remember And if he had been drinking a little bit, I mean, it's possible
that... So they'd had lunch. He wasn't at the pub because he was boozing it up. He had met a friend after doing something that morning that I cannot recall.
I heard that he had a couple of Guinnesses.
They went there and they had lunch.
Yeah. And a couple drinks.
But I'm sorry, but if I sit down at lunch and I have two beers with my lunch... My faculties are in place.
I'm not saying that his faculties are not in place. I'm just saying that, like, even me, totally sober, can think about how long something took, you know, a day or two ago and say, I think it took a half hour, when in reality it took me 10 minutes.
No, I'm just saying that I don't think that he was sauced in any way.
No, I'm not saying that. Okay. I just think it could have affected his
sense of time. Oh, yeah. Got it, yeah.
For sure. And I don't know if the custom in the pubs in Britain is to have bar time like we have here in America, where you set your clocks ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if they do that, too. So that could
screw up the timekeeping.
Yeah. That can totally screw you up. There was another interesting point, which is that several days after the murder, police said that they were going to fingerprint the weapons and see if they could ID the killer from that. And that's when Potter said, oh, by the way, I should probably mention to you that I touched the murder weapons. I touched both the pitchfork, you know, and the slash hook, just so you know. And the police are like, why did you do that? And Potter says, well, Harry Beasley, remember Harry Beasley went up there with Edie and Potter and found the body. He said, well, Harry Beasley said that I should check the body and make sure he's not still alive. So I got kind of close to him and I think I'm pretty sure I touched the murder weapons. So when police asked Harry Beasley about this, Beasley said, no, I said no such thing to him. And Beasley also said he didn't recall seeing Potter touch the weapons at all.
In Potter's defense, though, Beasley and Edie left the scene to go drop her back at the house and get her settled and then go get the constable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Potter's just hanging out there by himself.
Yeah.
So it could have possibly happened. It could have been a passing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Even just so much as a sarcastic comment, you should probably check to make sure he's alive.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it might, as your partner, you might want to say something like that. Yeah, sure. And so it's entirely possible he did touch them in all innocence. That obviously raised some suspicions with the police, the fact that he waited several days. Although, again, you know, the fact that he waited and then said, oh, by the way, you know, after the police said, we're going to fingerprint the weapons. Oh, by the way, I touched them. And by the way, they found no fingerprints on the weapons, which is strange because at least Charlie should have been on there. But maybe the killer wiped him off. I don't know. But again, that's also something you can kind of forget, too.
Yeah.
You know, stressful moment and all that. And suddenly, you know, and it doesn't strike you as important that you touch those things.
Yeah.
And then when you hear about the fingerprint, it's like, oh, you know, I should probably let you guys know that I touched these things. So,
yeah.
And the only other thing about that was even suspicious about Potter is apparently he'd been skimming.
He had
been skimming, yeah. He'd been apparently over-reporting the time that his laborers, including Charlie, were putting on the farm and then pocketing the difference.
Which was not an uncommon practice.
No, not really.
Managers to this day do that crap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and that's certainly not a motive for murder. Even if Charlie had found out, Charlie might have been like, you know, that's what I would expect. Or, you know, I mean, certainly Charlie's not going to go, oh, I'm going to rat you out and you're going to have to pay your dad back the sum of, like, you know, 20 pounds, you know, and then he's going to get murdered over that. I can't quite see that. And how the hell did Charlie find out who told him and why did he not tell the police?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, how did Charlie get a hold of the books is what I want to know.
Yeah. There was another last piece of potentially incriminating information, which apparently Potter's trousers had some marks on the front of them, which appeared to be blood.
Didn't he explain that away because he had to go get a heifer out of a ditch?
Well, the thing about it is he worked on a farm. I mean, you're going to get dirt, blood, and all kinds of stuff on you.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. So, I mean, Potter was, I think, definitely a strong suspect. Well, not that strong.
He was a suspect.
Stronger than any we've said so far.
He was the strongest suspect, but still not much of a suspect, really, frankly. They'd still never found a real motive. And, you know,
it also seems like with the kind of damage that was done, you would expect more than just a few flecks of blood on the front of your pants.
That's true.
If you slice a guy's throat open with a bill hook, there's going to be blood everywhere.
There's going to be way more blood.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So that's a good point. And Obviously, if he did do it, he would have run home and changed. But then, you know, if he had marks on his pants, it's because of something else that he did in the farm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just not seeing it with Potter. I just don't think it was him. So that leads to our next theory, which is maybe it was a serial killer. Maybe it was just a kind of a random thing. As it turns out, in England in 1945, there were actually a lot of people out wandering the countryside because people in some of the cities had actually been bombed out. They'd lost their homes. They were kind of refugees within England. Other people decided to get the hell out of the cities just for safety's sake because they were catching some bombs from the Germans. And so there was a lot more mobility in England at this time than there normally was. So there were people out in the countryside wandering around, very easy for some ne'er-do-well from London to pop into some little village or another and just murder somebody.
Yeah, but it was a pretty stylized murder.
Yeah, it really was.
And if, what was his name? The investigator?
Fabian,
if he was able to dig up something that happened over 100 years ago that was quote-unquote identical, it seems he would have been able to find if some other...
Somebody brought that to him.
Somebody, he didn't dig it up.
Somebody brought the 70-year-old murder.
Sure, but there was enough stuff around this... I don't know.
I forgot to mention that murder from 1885.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that was a little bit exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it turns out that James Haywood, the murderer, actually just attacked her with a pitchfork and didn't pin her to the ground. He just stabbed her, you know, with.
And she didn't die right away.
No, no, she was taken off to, I think, her daughter's home, and she eventually died later that day. Yeah, late in the evening.
She did die from the wounds.
Oh, yeah, she definitely died. He was tried for it, but he wasn't hanged, as the story says.
He went to the sanitarium.
Yeah, he was declared not guilty because of insanity, and he spent the rest of his life in an insane asylum where he died. And so that story was not quite correct. And there was also some allegations that potentially Anna Tennant was related to Charlie.
Oh,
although, again, it's a
this
pretty...
This is such a reach.
Well, it's a tenuous connection, and again, it doesn't really mean much. I mean, in rural England, and again, and probably a lot of other places too, where people are living in these little villages and farms, probably a lot of those people are related in some tenuous way or another, second, third cousins. I mean, probably all over the place. So it doesn't mean squat, really. Well, back to our serial killer, I guess there's not much to say about that, except that, you know, if he went around and murdered a few people here and there, and if he varied his M.O. a little bit, one of the things you got to remember about Charlie is that he was 74 years old. He'd been working outside his entire life. He probably looked older than he was from just all that exposure.
Easy target, you mean?
Yeah, and so you see this guy, you know, walking with a cane and everything, you know, hobbling around, about to work on the hedge, and you're thinking, easy pickings. And
just walk over him, shove him down.
I know, and it turns out the old guy's a lot stronger than he actually looks. He puts up a fight, in which case, you know, you start using all the weapons at your disposal, and so maybe it turned into sort of a bigger brouhaha than you actually intended it to.
So I there's another theory on here that I think is more appropriate for this, but calling it a serial killer, I think is an incorrect naming for this entire scenario that we've just talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be just a random attack.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a serial killer scenario to me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm careful to throw. I don't want to throw serial killer on everything.
No, exactly.
I mean, granted, that gets us higher rankings in iTunes, but it's not the truth.
Yeah. No, not at all. Okay, the theory you're thinking about, I think, is the one labeled Thrill Kill by local high school kids.
No, that actually
Oh, it's not
was.
That one?
Oh, that one's a good one, though. Let's talk about that one.
I like that one, yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, that's the entire theory right there.
I know.
It kind of is, yeah. So, yeah. Well, you've heard all the evidence. I like it, but, you know.
It's good evidence.
It. Yeah.
And you made it up. That's why you like it.
They made a movie about this. I Know What You Did Last Valentine's Day. And okay. Well, I'll move on to our next theory, which is actually kind of similar to the serial killer, which is a robbery gone wrong.
It's essentially identical.
Well, again, if you're one of these guys and you're on the road, you're kind of homeless. You've been made into a refugee and stuff. I mean, it might have occurred to you to do a little robbery. The way he'd picked Charlie, I don't know, he didn't exactly look like a wealthy guy. But at the same time, he looked like he might have looked like really easy pickings.
So the only thing that I can think about to make this, or not the high school kids, but the random killer bit work, is Charlie was known to take his lunch with him. And so if you are walking on the road or you're walking through the area and you're hungry and you see a guy with a sandwich and he's got it and an apple and you say, I'm sorry, I'm really, really hungry. Could I have an apple, please? And he cusses you out for asking for an apple because you and every other Tom, Dick, and Harry are coming through here and asking me my food. Stop it. And somebody loses their mind over that. I mean, that's the best motive I can come up for with this, the random attack scenario that we're talking about.
I don't know.
Because money, guess, he doesn't look rich.
He doesn't look rich, but he also seems like the kind of guy who totally would give you an apple if you were walking past.
He probably, at the very least, would have been polite about it. Although you never know, his fly was undone. He might have said, "Oh, you want the sandwich that bad? Well,
here's..." Oh,
oh no!
Wow, that took you down a different alley.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. But yeah, again, it could have been, like you say, sort of a random sort of race thing. Somebody wanted to rob him, and then it turns out, like I said in the previous theory, that they bit off more than they thought they were going to be biting off, and they had to, you know, basically really do a lot to subdue Charlie. And in the end, they wind up going a little overboard, because by this time, especially if you're just kind of have a punk mentality, you're thinking, oh, this old guy should have been a pushover. Now I'm angry. You know, and then you go after him with great guns. And
I guess on the other hand, you know, he bought this watch used. It wasn't some family heir, and that was the only thing that was really missing from him, right?
Yeah, and it might not have been taken from him. Maybe he didn't have it on him.
Yeah, I mean, or he did have it on him, and, you know, when somebody says, "All right, old man, give me your watch," like, you know, are you really going to... I don't know him, I mean, obviously, because... He's been dead for longer than I've been alive. But I, you know, I guess in my mind, I kind of think, like, really? You're gonna fight somebody over a crappy little watch? I mean, okay, but I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Charlie might have just, like, you know, especially from that older generation. I mean, people might have been more inclined to look at things in moral terms. And they're thinking, this guy wants to rob me, you know, I'm not going to permit it just on general principles.
Yeah.
Screw him,
yeah,
you know.
That's
it
true.
Could have
the
been
stiff
that.
Upper lip and all that.
Uh-huh. And, you know, Charlie might have felt like actually he was, you know, well-armed and, you know, maybe he had one of his weapons on him.
He knew how to use the, what was it? It wasn't called the bill hook.
His, yeah, the,
was
sla- called, the slash,
the slash hook.
Yeah.
He was obviously a rather handy with a slash hook.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Probably would have felt like he could defend himself.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, but apparently not quite capable enough, unfortunately for him. So on to our next theory. I mean, the robbery gone wrong is really a possibility, I think. But, you know, who knows? Again, sad to tell you, we haven't reached quite the end here. This one is probably not going to get solved, not for the next 30 seconds at least, until we solve it. Okay, I'm going to name the killer. Jack the Ripper.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, Jack would have been probably at least 75 in this time, because his last murder was in 1888, correct?
I think that sounds right, yeah. It's been so long since I've looked at his dates.
Yeah, I think it was 1888.
We'll just say right in that ballpark.
Yeah, so let's say Jack started young and he was 18. Okay, he would have been born in 1870, same year as Charlie. Maybe he just
wanted...
So it's
two old codgers fighting in the field.
Yeah. That's why Jack waited.
Wait, was the wound from left to right or from right to left?
I'm sorry.
This is fun, but
that's a good one.
No.
But yeah,
mm-mm.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-mm.
Well, there's also, of course, the Zodiac Killer. It's not
definitely not
yeah.
Ted Cruz.
Nope, that's definitely not it.
Yeah. So let's see what we're gonna like. Hang on a second here. I am gonna go for this one. I think that it was a random killing. I don't think anybody in the village really had an incentive to kill him. I don't think anybody had an incentive to kill him in such a huge, horrible way. I mean, if I wanted to kill Charlie and I lived in that, what I would do is I would bash him over the head with a rock and leave his body lying near a rock on the ground, so it maybe looked like possibly he just tripped and fell and bashed his head. I mean, you don't do something super spectacular in a tiny village.
And yeah. then try to make it... I mean, yeah. yeah. Is this a Mr. Bean scenario where he yeah. he trips on a rock and the pitchfork goes flying and the flash hook hits him and bounces off and then he gets yeah. knocked in the head and then he falls? And, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I don't think... No. So I just think that it was not somebody from the village. I just really find it hard to believe somebody from the village would have done that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking some random thrill kill murder, perhaps?
That seems like the most likely. I mean, it could... I think that the whole witchcraft angle is hooey.
Oh, yeah.
But I also think that there is the possibility that somebody in the village knew something or was responsible. Mm. That's a really small chance, but I can't rule that out entirely.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, actually, you know, there could have been one person in the village who was a murderer. Yeah, it could have been
possible.
I mean, yeah, he could have been a dirty old man for all we know, and he was pinching some girl's fanny every time he saw her, and her dad or her brother had enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, that happens. That used to happen.
Yeah.
You know, you defended her honor by taking the guy's head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, but I think it was random, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, most likely. But we don't think we'll ever know. Okay. So that's it for this episode. So a few administrative details here. Number one, you probably want to know how to get a hold of us. You can get a hold of us through our email, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. We also have one of these website thingy-bobbers. It is called thinkingsidewayspodcast.com, where you can download our episodes or listen to them. And we'll have links up there. We're definitely going to have some cool links for you, like that BBC interview that we found so funny.
Oh, yeah.
And of course,
it definitely has to be on there.
Oh, yeah. You can also find us in other places, like, of course, good old iTunes, where you can subscribe. You can rate us and review us. Give us a good rating. We like those better. Well, and that'll make us like you better. So it's a win all the way around. And, of course, you can stream us like Google Play and lots of other places. We are also part of this whole social media thing you probably heard so much about. There's the Facebook, where we have a group and a page.
Mm-hmm.
So join the group. Like the page. Don't try to friend us, but just join the group. There's lots of fun discussions going on out there. We are also on the Twitter, where we are Thinking Sideways. And we have a subreddit, Thinking Sideways. And what else? There's merchandise. If you're really interested, you can get shirts, mugs, stickers. There are Zazzle and Redbubble stores that are linked on the right-hand panel of our website. And that's about it. So until next week and our next fantastic mystery, I'm signing off. This is Jose. Toodaloo.
Bye.
So I have this hedge that needs trimming. Can you guys come take a look at it? I got this really cool.
That's kind of Devin's specialty.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Bye, guys.